Well, we are in the midst of our series that I call Drips. And we've been taking a pretty good hit the last few weeks, at least some of us have, because we've been trying to get our arms around the ideas that some of the things that we as wives and mothers and daughters and sisters and friends do can come across much like a leaking roof, an irritant, a drip, 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 the Bible calls it. And we've looked at a number of kinds of drippings, and today we move into an area that I am sensitive to the fact that I might hurt someone's feelings, and I don't want to do that. But we're going to talk about the worry wart, the person whose characteristics of their life are centered a lot around worry. I was thinking about what the difference between fear and worry is, and I'm sure there are a number of ways you could bifurcate that, but the one that came to my mind was fear, whether it's real or imagined, is actually focused on something. There's something we're afraid of. It might be irrational, it might be a phobia, but nonetheless it's focused on something. Worry is a state of being. It's not a specific thing, although we worry about specific things from time to time. But the person whose drippings are focused on being worried is just anxious all the time over a lot of things. In fact, I got a little concerned as I was doing a little research into the whole issue of the psychology of worrying. Apparently there are, according to one site I looked at, 374 ways to label you today mentally ill. Now, when I grew up, as a child, I only knew one person that was off their rocker. That was kind of what we used as an expression. And I'm betting even in the professional field of psychology in the early 50s, they wouldn't have had but 8 or 10 categories that they would utilize for someone who is mentally ill. But today in our society, we have 374 different ways. In the last 10 years, 29% more women are using antidepressants than 10 years ago. Now, quickly, I should say, with my eyes closed so I can't determine if there's anyone in the room, I'm not picking on someone who has an issue that medical people have determined the best therapeutic approach is a kind of medication. I'm not picking on anybody. All I'm saying is that it's rampant. That there is an awful lot of it going on. Apparently, 20% of all Americans are now taking at least one drug to address some kind of a psychological disorder. 20%, 1 in 5. And there has been a 100% increase in the number of children under the age of 10 taking some kind of antipsychotic medication in the last 10 years. We are medicating. 2.5 million people in our country take medicine for some form of anxiety. That is a huge issue. And it's an issue that the Bible doesn't shy away from. In fact, much of our Bible addresses this kind of condition, the worrier. Let's get our arms around what it means to worry. In English, the word worry means to choke. It means literally to strangle. If I wanted to take an English derivation of the word worry, it would be to grab my arms around your neck and choke you until there was no creativity left in you. Nothing positive to come out. I'm just strangling you. In our Bible, in the Greek, there is an incredible word, merimneo. And merimneo means to have anxious care, to be troubled. Literally to be worried, but it's a compound word, and it comes from two specific words, merizo meaning to divide, and nous meaning mind. It's a divided mind. When someone worries, they've split their mind. It's no longer central and focused. It's no longer working on a primary path. It's divided up. And it's divided up among worthwhile and then obviously damaging kinds of thoughts. It's the inability to maintain a wholeness. It's a fracturedness, a fractured mind. Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, great place to start. I even put it right here in your notes. You don't even need to look there. Don't worry, merimneo. don't have a divided mind about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all that He's done. If you have a propensity to be a worrywart, that's the verse you want to camp in, because it offers you the anecdote. Instead of being a worrier, you become a prayer. And we'll talk a little more about that in a minute. But just to get our hands around what He's trying to tell us not to worry about, let's go to the book of Luke. And you're going to want to be in chapter 10 and chapter 11. So open your Bibles. We want to see what God has to say, not what the world has to say. What are some of the kinds of things that God wanted to make sure we knew were not a good idea to marimoneo about? Starting in Luke 12, let's start in Luke 12 and look at verse 25. Luke 12:25. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Simple question. Can you fuss your way into an extra hour of life? What's the answer? No. So marimoneo doesn't work to add time to your life. Look at verse 22. Then Jesus says to the disciples, "Therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, or what you will wear." Okay, we're told in this verse about three things we're not supposed to worry about. What are they? Back to our life, what we're going to eat. What about your body? What are you going to wear? Now, just everybody look up a second. In the last month, have you worried about finances? Nod your head. Okay, is that covered in this verse? Because finances are what we use to eat. Finances are what we use for what we wear. What did he say? Therefore, do not worry about what you're going to eat. What about your body? What about your wear? Let's talk about your body. Anybody in the last month worried about, I'm going to catch that disease? We've had a rash of funerals here recently for those of us that are in the Stony Brook family. And every time you attend a funeral, there is the time, and it's a good thing, not a bad thing, for you to immediately start thinking about your own life. And who among us did not, let's say in the last month, the thought didn't cross your mind, well, what if I get cancer? Or what if I get that disease? Or what if that were to happen to me, or that stroke, or that whatever? I mean, I can't tell you how many chest pains I had after a couple of funerals a month or so ago. You know, is that in the right place? That's marimoneo all over your body. Let's look in verse 11, still in chapter 12. Look up at verse 11. He says, when you're brought before synagogues and rulers and authorities, do not marimoneo about what or about how you will defend yourselves or what you will say. All right, last month, ever had any little self-conversations about an encounter you need to have with someone? And you start to fuss about what you're going to say, how you're going to handle it, confrontation with a kid, something you and your husband need to deal with, maybe a loved one, someone in the church, maybe in your work relationships, a touchy little whatever. What are we told? No marimoneo over what to say or those conversations. Go back to chapter 10 and verse number 41. In the context of the discussion about Mary and Martha, he says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. So, you know, we can't worry about food or clothing, therefore finances in general. We can't worry about adding time to our life. We can't worry about life itself. We can't worry about say or do in a difficult situation. And now he sums it all up. Hey, you can't marimoneo about anything. And then in chapter 12, go back to chapter 12, in verse number 26. And I said in your notes, it's kind of like the Lord was chuckling a little bit to himself. He's going to summarize this whole thing in verse 26. Since you cannot do this very little thing, that is add an hour to your life, Why do you worry about the rest? And I don't know the answer to that question. I know I do. I know I live in the land of men and women who do. I know it's dumb. I know he's made it very clear. He's got a list here for us, and it pretty much encompasses everything. But I put in your notes Matthew 6, a parallel passage, in verse 34, and it says this: "Therefore, do not be anxious for tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." We're so busy worrying about what's coming that we miss what is. I watch this with parents and kids. I just love that commercial. I think I may have mentioned it to you. It's worth mentioning again, the one about, I think it's DirecTV. And if you haven't seen it, you gotta watch for it, because it is so... It so says what this discussion is about. The guy's watching TV, he gets irritated because he can't see the channel he wants, and he slams his hand down. And when he slams his hand down, his little girl sees him slam his hand down, and she slams her hand down on the table. Next scene, she's at school, and the voiceover says, "And when your daughter gets frustrated, she gets in trouble at school," and she slaps something out of some teacher's hand. And then when she gets in trouble at school, she starts hanging around with the wrong crowd. The next scene, she's in a video arcade and she's got rings everywhere, you know? And if she starts hanging around the wrong crowd, she's going to marry the wrong person. And there's a wedding scene with scummy people. And then the last scene says, and if she marries the wrong crowd, you're going to end up with a grandson with a dog collar. And here he sits with his baby with his dog collar on it. I mean, there is a progression to fussing. That's what we do. We go all the way out there on so many things. We do it with our children. You know, if they hang out with that kid and play with that kid, then I'm gonna have grandkids with dog collars. We go there. The problem that I want to bring to your attention, there's about five aspects to it. The first is, and this is really important for us to get, worrying is sin. It's not a goof, it's not a oops, it's not a, oh, I would if I could, or wouldn't if I couldn't. It is sin. John MacArthur once said, worry is the sin of distrusting the promise and providence of God. And yet it is a sin that Christians commit perhaps more frequently than any other. The reason it's a sin is because worrying is the violation of the basic commandment of God of trusting Him. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Somebody quote it for me. Trust? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all his ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's the commandment. Worrying is the opposite. It's the saying, no, really can't do that. No, thanks, but no, I need to worry. You've called me to trust you about my family. Well, that's great, but I really need to worry. You know, in some cultures, they have worry beads. And on one of my mission trips, somebody gave me a set of worry beads, and it became a big joke about, you know, sharing in our worry beads. It's like we feel like we have to do something because we certainly can't just trust God. So we're over here either working our worry beads or sitting up at 2 a.m. or fussing about our kids and dog collar grandkids or whatever else it might be. But it is sin. In its purest form, worry is unbelief. It's like we say to God, can't really trust you on that one. I can make a list of some things I can trust you on. I'm trusting you for my soul, you know, like to go to heaven for all eternity. But I can't really trust you with my kids. I can trust you for eternal salvation, but finances, I'm sure you're not on that. Or health, you know, I can trust you for eternal security that I'm going to forever be with you, but I can't trust you over what's going to happen in my body. It's like we carve out a little over here, no can trust. At least in the moment, we don't believe that God knows everything. Something must have caught him by surprise. That thing we're worrying about, we're sure he didn't pay attention to that one. At least for the moment, we don't believe that he loves us unconditionally. I'm so scummy, he couldn't possibly be paying attention to me today. I've got such a sketchy attitude, I gotta be on my own, so I gotta be worrying about it. I'm such a poor parent, lost my temper, really no patience, so God must not be in my parenting at all. At least for the moment, we don't believe he loves us unconditionally. And at least for the moment, we don't believe he's in control of everything. When a loved one passes away early, and all the gals that normally sit over here that come from Forrester Ranch or wherever it is, the gal, Michelle Caradonna, her husband passed away last week, and the funeral is Thursday. And, you know, that family had such a long goodbye with their dad and husband. I believe almost 3.5-4 years of goodbye. That is awful. That is terrible. That is gut-wrenching. Years and years for the family to fully respond. As she said, post-traumatic disorder. Call it what you want. Devastating. But if you are able to say in the face of the greatest tragedies of life, God, ultimately you're in control. That's the trust part. The lack of trust is the worry part. Matthew 6:30 in your notes. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, how much, or will he not much more, clothe you? And then, and here's the phrase, you of little faith. The worrier is a sinner. It's a sin. It's a lack of faith. One of the things that's helped me over the years is when I get going on something and it's like a rocking chair. I love to rock anyway. My mom must have rocked me a lot as a kid, so I'm a rocker. And worries like that, you know, I get to going on a theme, no matter what it is. We better stop that. But anyway, I get to rocking on a theme. And when I can catch myself up is what I will say, and oftentimes out loud, I trust you with whatever it is. And I'm trying to be as specific as I can. I trust you that Brandon's going to get home safe tonight. New Year's Eve. Brandon had to work late. She was getting off at 1 a.m. She's a waitress. So I'm up at 1 a.m. You know, she lives in Long Beach. I wouldn't know if she got home or didn't get home. I mean, but I felt the need to be up, you know, on my rocking chair with the worry. And out comes the phrase, I trust you to get her home. And if you don't get her home, I trust you that that was your plan too. Sometimes saying it out loud, offering the alternative, which is trust. Because worry is sin. And what's devastating about it is that when worry goes amok, worry becomes a disease. Both emotionally and physically. It definitely robs us of things like enthusiasm for living, our sense of vitality. But ultimately, it begins to affect our health. I don't know how many of the kind of health issues that we struggle with in our world today, in some part, are connected to worry. It is a paralyzer. It's a useless, I put it in the notes this way, a useless merry-go-round. It's like we get on and we can't get off. Ralph Waldo Emerson once remarked that worry is the torment of pain. It's the torment of pain endured from evils that never arrived. I've said to you before, one of the studies that were done on people worrying is that less than 15% of the stuff we worry about actually ever happens. That's a pretty low odds for the amount of time we spend worrying. Corrie Ten Boom, one of my heroes in the book you ought to read. I started to say Peace Child, but that's not hers. Corrie Ten Boom's book is Hiding Place. Thank you. In one of her writings, she used this quote. She said, worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrows, but it empties today of its strength. No. Corrie Ten Boom, worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrows. It empties today of its strength. Worry is disease. Proverbs 12:25, anxiety weighs down the heart. It does. It saps it. It's like, it's like a little faucet that is opened, and all of the energy with which you would normally face the trials and challenges of life is gone because you've opened that little faucet and it's all dripped away. And I put it this way in your notes, worry has friends. You know, anger is a friend of worry. When our lives are so consumed with worry, we are quick to anger. Some of the angriest people I've ever known were people who spent their time in deep fear and anxiety. Because they had no other way to express it except in irritation and anger. If you're having a little trouble with some anger issues, you might ask yourself the question, how am I doing on my fear meter? How's my worrying? Because often that's a connection. Envy is another, quote, friend, unquote, of worry. It's an issue of looking around and not being satisfied or able to cope in our own world. So we look at somebody else's world and say, well, Carol and her husband Tom sure seem to have it perfect. I wish I had Carol's life. How dumb is that? Carol's got a normal life like all the rest of us. She's got a normal marriage. She's got a normal husband. She's got normal children. Just normal challenges. But envy, when I'm so consumed with my own fear base, I look on the other side of the fence and, boy, somebody else's looks better, at least from afar. Another friend of worry is self-pity. Gosh, I've got it bad. Really? Do you have it any worse than anyone else? When I have a pity party and I, you know, hand draw the invitations, I'm very careful about that. Calligraphy, you know. And I'm about ready to pass out the invitations to come to my pity party. That's one of the things that's helpful for me is to say, how bad is this? And God in His grace will bring to mind someone else whose sorrow or treasure or not treasure, but the things that they hold dear that might be in jeopardy right now. He'll bring that to my mind and I'll go, oh, mine's not quite so bad. I don't know how many of you read my musings, but this last week I was kind of doing tongue-in-cheek on that on parenting. I was saying, you know, you get down on yourself a little bit about parenting, but let's look at some folks that have got real problems with parenting. You know, throwing your kid overboard on a cruise ship. Now, I've wanted to throw Brianna a few times. I admit it. That thought occurred to me. She was so schnooky on a cruise ship one time. I actually chucked her up into her little bed thing. I didn't throw her overboard. I just kind of pushed her in the bed. But I can see how you get there. You know, there were a few more in there that were pretty drastic. You know, going, selling your kid for what, 15 grand so you take your other kids to Disney World? Okay, I wanted to sell her a time or two. The thought occurred. But I never did it. I didn't go to Taco Bell and start a, some lady started a bidding process. Who'll give me 500, you know? I mean, sometimes comparing yourself to others helps lower the bar a little. You're all laughing, but it's better than self-pity. And worry accomplishes absolutely nothing. See, I say to myself, yes, but I need to be prepared. You're laughing. Several of you are laughing, so I know you think the same thing. But if I stew on this, I'll get the right answer and I'll be prepared. Oh, really? No. Because inevitably what happens is the way I plan it out never happens that way. Ever. I have all those self little diatribes, you know, where I say this and I think the other person's going to say that and then I'm prepared for this. And I stew through that whole thing and I get to the person and they're either so gracious or so kind or so off the wall schnooky, none of what I had in my head ever works out. It doesn't accomplish anything. Matthew 6:27, can any of you by worrying add a single hour to your life? Same question. Answer no. And then the thing you got to remember is that worrying can become a lifestyle. It becomes the way we do life. It shapes us like any other habit. If you do something long enough, it shapes you. And our attitudes are fixed, in this case, with worry. As we approach each situation with such an anxious heart, we become consumed with the what-ifs. It's a pretty day, but what if there's a, I don't know, we don't have tornadoes, earthquake. It's a beautiful day, but we could have a bad earthquake. You know, my kid did really good in school, but then I flunked the history test tomorrow. My husband said kind things to me, but you know, he doesn't usually. You know, it's the lifestyle. We get consumed with the what ifs, and what happens is we rob today of everything God intended for today. There was a time period in my life I had a box in my house, and I had a box in my room actually, and the box was there to remind me to live in a one day compartment. You know, I can't leapfrog over today to 3 weeks from now or next summer or whatever the list would require. I have to live in the box of today. And I had a box sitting there as a reminder. I only get to deal with what's in the box today. Not tomorrow, not the next day, not in that relationship 10 years from now, or what's going to happen with the school 2 years from now, but I got to live in today. Matthew 6:34. Therefore, do not be worried about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Live in the box. So how do we do that? Well, I want to give you the anecdote which I started with, and you understand that the anecdote to worrying is prayer. But I want to give you some practical thoughts first. So I went looking and I found an article and I gave credit to the people who had it. And they had two or three ideas that I thought were pretty helpful and I want to pass them on. One of them was, and I love this, especially somebody like me that's so structured, you create a worry period. You have it on your calendar. Put it in your daytime. Put it on your phone. I am going to worry between 6 and 6:30 at night. 8 to 8:15. 5 to 5:30 in the morning. Pick a time. It doesn't matter. That is your worry time. So during the day, when your thought occurs, I don't want to, oh, what are the kids are going to, oh, my husband, oh, the finances, oh, the car, oh. You go, oh, wait a minute, it's not during the worry period. Can't worry about that right now. I'll get to that tonight during my worry period. Now you're laughing, but it does a couple of things. First, it gives you an excuse to stop worrying. It's not the cold turkey, it's I'm gonna get to worry, but not right now. Now, I don't think it's good to do your worrying in the morning. I think it's better to do your worrying in the evening. So then you can go to bed and wake up fresh and you can actually engage the new day. But you pick a time. And you go over your worry list. I don't do this anymore, but there was a time period when I was trying very much to focus on this in my life, and I kept a list. Okay, here's my list. And something about when I wrote it down, I didn't have to worry about it anymore, because it was on my worry list, readily accessible. I could get back to it any time. It was there. Of course, what that ought to be is your prayer list. But if you're struggling, let it be your worry list, at least in the early stages of recovery. Create a worry period. Have a worry list. But you don't cheat. You can't worry any other time than that 20-minute period. And you'll get to laughing at yourself. You'll be sitting there going, okay, now's the moment when I can let it rip and worry. And you'll start laughing. You will. You'll go, well, I'm so dumb. Why would I schedule a worry period? That's no dumber than worrying all day long. Second thing they came up with was to ask yourself, if the thing you're worrying about, the problem, is actually solvable. Okay. Syria is acting really bad right now. You do know Syria and what's happening in Syria? Okay. The ruler of Syria is a turkey jerk. He's killing off his people. I could worry about that. Watch the news, see what's happening, watch the devastation, and sit there for 20 minutes later about what a horrible world we're living in, and oh gosh, can I solve serious problems? No. It's not solvable by me. I don't have the resources. I don't know that anybody can. I think the world's marching to its cataclysmic apex of God's word, and it's all got to go to heck in a handbasket in order for us to get where the Bible says. So the answer to the question is, no, it's not really solvable. Okay, but let's take something that's a little closer to home. Your 23-year-old is behaving in a way you really wish they didn't. Okay, a 3-year-old, you can solve some behaviors. A 23-year-old, rocks a rock. They're independent, they're living on their own, they're making their own life choices, they're financially independent. What do you do to solve? You influence, you pray, you encourage, but can you solve your husband's work? He might get fired. He might not get the bonus. Okay. I looked over at Leslie. Your husband works for Dell. Leslie, do you control Dell? You do. Okay. But, you know, you start to fuss about, is he going to get the promotion or not? Is he going to get this thing or not? Is he going to get a reduction or not get his bonuses? Well, do you control that? You do not. So the question they ask is, if you can't solve it, you can't fuss about it. It's futility. It's futile. Another thing they came up with, a statement, which I think is so helpful, is to learn to accept uncertainty. Now, last week was our control freak deal, and the control freaks among us do not like uncertainty. We like to know exactly what's coming and in what order. But they're saying, here, wait a minute, how about a little moment when you recognize you don't control it? The quote here is, worry is seen as a way to predict what the future has in store, a way to prevent unpleasant surprises and control the income or the outcome. The problem is, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So learning to accept that there is an element of uncertainty in life is healthy. A fourth one that these writers came up with was the idea of challenging your anxious thoughts, kind of asking yourself, what's the cause of the anxiety? And while I don't want to spend all the time to go through this chart, I dropped it in here, and it's good for you to consider some of the possible causes for why you might be a, you know, world-class worrier. You know, if you're the person that's all or nothing in your thinking, then you're going to look at things in such a black or white way. And so you're going to tend to do things like, well, the little quote they said, well, if I fail short of perfection, well, then I'm a total failure. My dad jokingly used to say to me, if I brought home a paper that had a 98 on it, that's a really good paper, Sherry, but what happened to those other 2 points? Now, he was not trying to be obnoxious to me. He was not. Well, what do you think that embedded in me? Perfectionism. You know, magna cum laude is not as good as summa cum laude. Well, that might create a door for some anxiety. And they had a bunch of others on there. Well, let's get to the most important part, and that's the anecdote. The anecdote is trust, prayerful trust. The issue is, as one writer said, you cannot pray and worry at the same time. If you're praying, then you're not worrying. And if you're worrying, then you're not praying. We need to do what Matthew 6:25 says. And I wrote it on your notes. Therefore, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, or what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? So the first thing to say to yourself is, I got to focus on the big picture. The big picture. God gave me life. He expects me to use it. My first realm of influence is my family. They deserve my best. Not my leftovers, my best. The best I can be ought to be on display for my family. We're not perfect, and you're not going to be at it every day, but whatever your best is, your children, your husband, your immediate family, they ought to be the recipients of it. That's the big picture. And then other ministries, other opportunities, other ways. Life is more than fill in any blank. Any of the things that we worry about do not stack up once we get to engaging on the big picture. God gave us life. He gave it to me today. I may not have it tomorrow, but I have it today. I'm sitting here trying to influence you in an important way because he gave me breath today. Now, tomorrow morning, I might wake up and I might not have breath. But big picture, he gave it to me today. Just today. Another focus is on the one thing. Remember when Jesus is engaging Martha and he's trying to make her see that she's fussing about everything. He contrasts her to Mary and he says, look, Mary, she's done the one thing that's important. And the one thing was sitting at his feet and listening. She chose the good part. So focus on the big picture, but then focus on the one thing. Sometimes I've tried. This has been helpful for me recently. Okay, Lord, what is it you want me to do today? What's the one thing? Because I have a tendency to categorize something, live by a schedule. I'm pulled in 1,000 different directions. I got a list of things I need to get accomplished. And so sometimes I worry that I'm going to miss the best part, the one thing. Well, what is that one thing? Not too long ago, someone stopped by the school and wanted to visit for a minute, and I was buried in stuff that had to get done. I had a deadline. And I kind of blew them off. I greeted them, and I was friendly and all that, but I retreated back into my office to get my things to do list. And that night when I was recounting the day, I said, you know what? I think I missed it. I think I missed the one thing. The Lord had that person come all the way over to the school and come in for no good reason except that they wanted to spend a few minutes with me. And I kind of blew it off. I missed it. I don't want to live life like that. Focus on the one thing. And then last, focus on prayer. Prayer with thanksgiving is the key. We started this whole lesson on the sense and desire to think about the verse in Philippians 4. Don't worry about anything instead. Pray about everything. Tell God what you need and then thank Him for what He's done. Prayer with thanksgiving is the key to worry. You're worried about finances? Then make a list of the things He's already given you. When finances get really bad and you're worried about, boy, are we going to be able to feed the kids? Go open your pantry and stand there and thank Him for every can that's in there. Open your refrigerator and stand there. Thank you for the half a quart of milk. Thank you for the three quarters of a loaf of bread. Thank Him for the butter that's there. Thank Him for what you have. You're worried about gas prices are going up. Go sit in your car, turn the engine on, and see how much gas is in your car. And thank Him you got a quarter of a tank. Your husband isn't perfect and you're fussing about him. Well, he comes home, he brings his paycheck home, he hugs on one of your kids or pats the dog's head. You stop and think about those things and thank him for those things. That's the key to worry, is prayer with thanksgiving. And let me leave you with just a little thought. It's out of one of Max Licato's books. I think it's out of the book called In the Grip of Grace. He refers to Romans 8:31, and that verse says, if God is for us, who can be against us? And he says, the question is not simply who can be against us. You could answer that one. Who's against you? Disease and inflation, corruption, exhaustion, calamities confront, fears in prison. Where Paul's questions who can be against us, we would list our foes much easier than we could fight them. But that's not the question. The question is, if God is for us, who can be against us? He says, indulge me for a moment. Four words in that verse deserve your attention. Read the phrase, God is for us. Please pause a minute before you continue. Read it aloud. God is for us. Repeat the phrase four times. God is for us. God is for us. God is for us. God is for us. God is for you. Your parents may have forgotten you. Your teachers may have neglected you. Your siblings may be ashamed of you. But within reach of your prayers is the maker of the oceans. God is for you. Not maybe for you, not has been for you, not was for you, not would be, but God is for you. He is for you today, at this hour, at this minute, as you read this sentence. No need to wait in line or come back tomorrow. He is with you. He could not be closer than he is at this second. His loyalty won't increase if you are better, nor lessen if you are worse. He is for you. So why worry? Let's pray. Lord, thank you again for the power of your word, for the truth that you teach in simple sentences, for the reality of understanding that worry is a divided mind. It's a fractured way of looking at life, and you call us to abandon the fracturedness and instead come to you with prayer, with thanksgiving on every occasion. I pray, Father, that we would all take to heart the truth of this lesson and be better women because of it. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.